Cocoa Radio is made possible thanks to our paid members. For just $5 a month, you can help ensure that we can continue producing the show in the future. You'll also receive members-only benefits such as exclusive members-only episodes, a supporters newsletter, exclusive discounts and giveaways on some of my favorite developer tools, and more. To become a supporter, go to cocoradio.fm/membership. Now, on to the show. Hey everybody, this is Justin, and this week on Cocoa Radio, I'm talking to Brian Irace, who is a mobile developer at Tumblr. Hey Brian, how are you?
Great, thanks for having me.
I wanted to have you on since I started the show for a couple reasons. Number one, your tweet was one of the ones that inspired me to do the show because you were wishing for something a little bit more technical in the Cocoa podcast side, but also because you're also the one that whenever I would complain about CocoaPods, you would be there right there to tell me what I was doing wrong. So I wanted to bring you on to talk about CocoaPods.
Are you sure you don't want to talk about something less controversial like gun control or religion or...
Yes. That's the After Dark segment of Cocoa Radio. We're just going to anger. And then next week, we're going to do dot syntax versus brackets. Let's go ahead and get started. What is CocoaPods?
So CocoaPods is a dependency manager for Objective-C code.
Okay, easy enough. Why is it controversial? What is getting people upset about CocoaPods? It seems like I've heard, like, it's been around for a couple of years now. Why are people still not happy with it, I guess?
I think there's a number of reasons. One, I think, is the misconception that using a dependency manager means that you're going to be using a really large quantity of third-party code. I think another problem that people have with CocoaPods is that it does kind of modify the Xcode project file, which is a bit of a undocumented black box, which makes people a little squirmish and leads them to believe that it could be a problem down the road. But no, I think that both of those issues have valid counterpoints, and I think a lot of the benefits outweigh the potential downsides.
So we've got this CocoaPods idea, and when I first saw it about 2 years now that it's been out, the internet people can correct me if I'm wrong, but I wasn't really that aware of why I would need it because I've always been someone that has been using submodules. But then as I've started doing more with Glassboard and seeing like what all this green grass is on the other side of these fences in Android and .NET world, I realized that, hey, these guys all have these dependency management systems like NuGet or Gradle and Maven and all of those. And us, we're kind of just downloading code from GitHub, maybe using submodules, throwing it into Xcode projects, and then manually having to keep track of that stuff, which is kind of a pain.
Yeah, I think it really does depend on your background. I've written a lot of server-side Java code, and we use things like Ivy and Maven. I've also written quite a bit of JavaScript, Node.js, and they have the NPM package manager, which is just phenomenal. And even if you use just a couple things, a crash reporting library, something for analytics, it's still really nice to not have to manually save files individually, copy them in, add them to your Xcode project, or... like you said, even using submodules, you still kind of don't get that project file integration. You just kind of get the code downloaded on disk for you.
So let's say I wanted to add CocoaPods to an existing project. What's involved in doing that?
So all you need to do is create... first, you need to install CocoaPods, which is installed using Gem, which is kind of funny because you're using a package manager to install another package manager. So CocoaPods is written in Ruby. It uses the default Ruby installation that comes with your Mac. All you need to do is run Gem install CocoaPods, and you get the command line tool. Once you do that, you can create what's called a pod file, which is basically just a text file. It's currently a really simple Ruby DSL that just defines which pods you want to include and which versions of those pods you want to include. Once you've done that, you can just run pod install. It will look at the dependencies listed in your pod file, download them, integrate them with your project. If there are any conflicts between two different versions of the same library that you're depending on, it will highlight those for you. And then it spits out an Xcode workspace, which basically has two subprojects. One subproject will be your original project that you had, and then a new one will be a pods project, which creates a static library that your original project now depends on. And all the configuration is done for you. So all the files are correctly added to the right targets. All the header search paths are linked up. Any libraries that the pods depend on, like UIKit or core location, are automatically linked in. And if you need to set compiler flags on a per-file basis, for example, if you're using some code that does not use automatic reference counting, CocoaPods will handle that for you as well.
Okay, so that was a lot. at once, which is awesome, but let's break it down a little bit. So the first couple things you said make me think that I need to be a Ruby programmer to do CocoaPods. I've got to install this gem thing. I've got to use this DSL language. It's Ruby specific. I have a little bit of Ruby experience, but is this something where I can just use the off-the-shelf installed with the developer tools version of Ruby to do all this?
You can. You don't need to install Ruby at all. You can just use the one that comes with OS X. I honestly have no Ruby experience at all. I've never written a line of Ruby unless you count the pod files that I've written. It's not something you need to be fluent in whatsoever. All you need to do is run gem install CocoaPods, single command. Presumably, they could give a DMG that would kind of do this for you, but that doesn't exist at the moment. And then the pod file syntax is really simple. Like, the fact that it's Ruby is almost irrelevant. You can just treat it as some generic DSL that you can learn in 5 minutes by reading through the documentation.
Right. Yeah. I'm looking at my pod file in one of my current projects, and it's basically the first couple of lines is saying platform colon iOS comma 7.0. So I'm targeting iOS 7, my Xcode project's name, and then just a listing of the pods that I'm using, such as a Cocoa Lumberjack or Hockey SDK or things like that. What about finding these pods? Is this something where I have to basically look on GitHub and see which projects have a pod spec, which I don't think we've covered yet, but or is there a search engine where I can go in and say, hey, I'm looking for some sort of progress HUD thing that I want to write myself. What do we do there?
So if you go to cocoapods.org, there's a massive search box, the first thing you'll see when you go to that page, and you can type, it will search by pod name, author, keywords, summary, and lots of other fields. So it's actually super useful. You can go in there right now, you can type Tumblr, for example, and you'll see a bunch of different Tumblr API clients. It's really useful, and it has a link right there. You can click right to the docs. You can see how well documented it is. You can see if there are unit tests. You can see the license. It's really quite elegant.
So we were talking a little bit about managing the dependencies and having these sort of conflicts. And the way that we've done forever to get away from these sort of conflicts in Objective-C is having these absurd class name prefixes. We're getting away from that a little bit in Swift. But what exactly is CocoaPods doing under the hood? Is it just saying, hey, library A has an instance of AF networking, and so does library B? One has AFN1, one has AFN2. How is it handling stuff like that? That seems like an issue where that's magic under the hood, but I don't know if that's magic that, as a developer, that I want there to be. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense, and that's a great question. So CocoaPods currently is not intelligent at all about how it resolves situations like that, but it will bring them to your attention. So it will look through your dependencies and recursively their dependencies, and it will just highlight for you if you have two different versions of the same pod that are being depended on. And then it's up to you to address that, which can usually be done by some simple reordering of your dependencies and some more explicit definitions of which versions of which pods you want to include. There are plans for CocoaPods going forward to be able to do automatic resolving of conflicts, similar to how Bundler does for Ruby, but that's work that has not been started yet.
Okay, and we were talking about the kind of scary part of this whole thing, and this was also getting back to my sort of reservations before I changed my opinion, as I'm wont to do. This is creating an Xcode workspace on the fly. Is it touching or isn't touching the actual Xcode project?
It touches it only slightly, and I'm probably going to get a small detail wrong here, but I believe the only thing it changes is it changes your project to use an XC config file that is generated by CocoaPods. But other than that, all the configuration is in the workspace, which the pod command line tool generates.
Okay, so we generate this workspace, and we start opening our project through this workspace. What happens in Xcode if Xcode 7 changes all of this, and I'm at the point where my workspaces no longer work because they've switched to a completely different format, and I try to open them and everything is broken? Am I hosed with CocoaPods, or is there some sort of backup? Because in a lot of ways, you could say this is a slippery slope sort of thing, but it's also, I know developers, this is how we think.
Yeah, we kind of touched on this at the start of the show, where one of the biggest concerns that people have is, what if CocoaPods goes away? What if Xcode breaks compatibility with CocoaPods? And while I think both those things are pretty unlikely, the former being more unlikely than the latter, the thing is that all CocoaPods gives you is a correctly generated workspace. So even if the tool was just to completely go away tomorrow, you wouldn't be in trouble because you still have a workspace that has all of the source files and all of the build configurations properly set up. So you don't really need the CocoaPods tool from that point forward. I mean, you would need to revert to a more manual way of getting updates to your dependencies, but using CocoaPods does not lock you in at all, because all it's giving you is a workspace that is configured the way that it needs to be. And you could have done that configuration yourself, but CocoaPods did it for you instead.
Yeah, and that, I think that's one of the points where I really got over the hump. And it was, I was working on a contract gig with a company in New York, and the developer there was using CocoaPods. So it was kind of, I was forced out of my stubborn ways as a developer and forced to actually start using it. And I realized that, hey, we're importing, like, we've generated this pod file, and like setting all that stuff up was a little frustrating because I was getting weird errors and whatever, but that's could have been my issues. But then once everything's in there, like all the pods are in this folder, it's all committed into version control, and I can check it out and build the app without having to deal with any of that stuff. But let's talk about a little bit about some of the weird kind of breaking changes. I remember there was a while there where every time I would check out CocoaPods again, stuff was being broken or there was like all these breaking changes. Is it stabilized a little bit now where I don't have to rewrite stuff or debug different gem errors or whatever it is?
No, it's pretty stable at this point. It still is technically beta software, and it's totally understandable that some people are not comfortable using beta software, especially not on important projects that they make their living off of. But everything has to start somewhere, and I've personally found it to be extremely stable over the last few releases, and I think the team is really aware of how much momentum has gotten behind it, you know, in the recent couple of years. And as such, I think that there are not going to be these kind of haphazard changes going into it, if there ever were. I mean, there's always issues with OS 10 versions come out that change the default Ruby installation, and there's always possibilities for things to get in a weird state. But I think it's safe to say that the CocoaPods tool is pretty stable and that you're not going to have that many problems going forward based on breaking changes that they introduce on purpose.
What about Xcode integration? Is there any sort of way that I can manage my CocoaPods through either an Xcode plugin or something official from the CocoaPods guys, or is it still mostly terminal only?
It seems like there are a couple Xcode plugins just from doing a quick Google search. I can't say I personally used any of them, but that would be something that would be really, really fun to use. There are a couple of GUI tools that wrap the command line interface as well, but nothing official.
That's one of the things that I really love about Visual Studio. If you are a former .NET developer, earmuffs so you don't hear the next 30 seconds or so. But NuGet is really integrated directly into Visual Studio. It's one of those things where I can right-click on a project and say, manage my NuGet packages, and it'll show me which ones are updated. I can search for new ones in there. It'll download them. It does all that stuff for me. I'm pretty sure that NuGet is an open source project that was started by a third party. Microsoft has just kind of gotten behind it in a lot of ways and maybe is supporting the development now. Odds that Apple will ever do this. I think I know the answer, but what do you think?
I think it's gotten to a size that there's no way that Apple isn't aware that this exists right now. And while I think I agree with you that it would be very surprising to see them give first party support right inside Xcode, I also don't necessarily see them going out of their way to prevent it from working.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it has gotten a lot of groundswell, especially the past year. It seems like every project that I see now, there's either a pod spec in there or the first issue in the repo on GitHub is, hey, where's the pod spec? So let's cover that. I've got a couple open source libraries. They've been out for a while. What do I have to do to get them onto the CocoaPod system so that you guys at Tumblr can instantly just pull in my code and start taking advantage of it?
Sure. So we covered pod files already, and pod files, again, are just basically a list of your app's dependencies. Now, a pod spec is what a library creator would include along with their library that indicates what version of iOS it is targeted for. It will indicate what libraries it needs to be linked against. If there is compiler flags that need to be set, it will specify that. It includes a version number. It's basically just a JSON file that includes all of the metadata for your library. And when somebody else tries to include your pod inside their app, those metadata fields are basically what the CocoaPods tool uses to determine how to build the workspace and which versions of the pod should be downloaded.
So I'm looking at the pod spec I've got right now for one of my projects, and the language for this one is pretty Ruby heavy compared to the actual pod file. So pod spec, pod file. So in mine, I've got like name, version, summary, a description, license, requires Arc and a bunch of different files. How much of this is me being a nice developer? Like, do I need to say what the homepage is for the project or what the license is for it? Or is it just the bare minimum? You just have to say, hey, here's the name of it, here's the version of it, and here's the GitHub repo for it. Go nuts.
There's a couple things that you mentioned there that I can unpack. So you don't need to provide a lot of that stuff. It's kind of just like you said, you being a good citizen in terms of a homepage, a summary, and it also helps people find your pods more easily via search. There are some things that are required. One nice thing that you can do is you can just type pod spec create on the command line tool, and it will generate the scaffolding for you. So you don't have to go in and manually type all the different keys. You can kind of just go in and fill in the values. Another thing I want to mention is the pod spec format that you're referring to is more Ruby heavy than the pod file, but pod specs can now also be in JSON. And this was a pretty recent change that was introduced. And if you create a Ruby pod spec still, which you're allowed to do, and there are benefits to doing that, such as being able to run post-install hooks, or if you wanted to programmatically generate your pod spec somehow, it will actually get converted to JSON on the server when you push it up.
Oh, interesting. So if I create my pod spec files through the command line still, it's doing it through Ruby, but the new preferred way is JSON? Or is it just that's what the server wants because it's easier to parse for them?
So the server stores everything canonically in JSON format now, and anything that was previously in Ruby has since been converted. You're still allowed to use Ruby for your local development efforts because, like I said, it is helpful for some people. But if you choose to do that, it'll just get converted to JSON when you push it up.
Is there any plans for me to have to actually go through and manually convert my all two of my pod specs, or is it something where just good to go?
Yeah, you can just continue using Ruby if you want, but it's will just be converted for you after the fact.
So wrapping up kind of the developer story on this, there was, I guess a month or two ago, there was this big announcement from the CocoaPods guys about this thing called Trunk, which looked like it was the replacement for the insanely large GitHub repo of pod specs. What exactly is Trunk?
Basically, the way that pods were updated previously was there was a pod specs GitHub repository, and in that repository was the pod spec for every single pod. So if I wanted to create a new pod, what I would do is I would, you know, create a new GitHub repo on my own GitHub account. I would put the code in there. I would put a pod spec in there. Then I would fork the CocoaPods pod specs repo. I would copy over the pod spec file from my own project into that pod specs repo, and then I would create a pull request. Now, there's a couple of problems here. One is that pull request would need to be manually merged by someone, and that person would basically just need to eyeball whether or not the person creating the pull request is actually the right person who should be able to update that pod. This doesn't scale, clearly, and it's has the potential for, you know, something really bad happening if somebody was able to push a version of an analytics SDK and they just changed it to send all the analytics to their server instead of the one that it was supposed to go to. So Trunk is basically a web service that sits in between the user and GitHub. So all of the specs are still stored on GitHub, but in order to make updates to specs, you no longer create pull requests. Instead, you use the Trunk service, which knows who you are. You get an authentication token, and you can use the command line tool now to push versions of your updated specs that will eventually make it into that repo, but now they go through a service that does some authentication along the way.
So is this something where it's doing validation on it, or is it something where it's just kind of a go-between between the GitHub repo and doing authentication? In other words, there's no review process here. There's not like some guy in Iowa who's going to approve each one of the pod specs. It's basically, hey, this is Justin's stuff. We know this because it's his token and it's getting pushed forward.
Yeah, exactly that. So the whole point is they wanted to move away from some guy. His name was Keith Smiley. He did almost every single pod spec for a couple of years. And it was just a bit much. And again, even someone who's diligently looking at every pod is potentially not going to be able to catch anything that looks amiss. So the main benefits of Trunk are making this automatic, making it secure, and like I mentioned, doing the Ruby to JSON conversion if you're still choosing to author your pod specs in the Ruby DSL. Now that they're all stored in JSON canonically in GitHub, more tools can be built on top of the CocoaPods specs repository. If somebody wanted to build, you know, a GUI app or an Xcode plugin like we talked about earlier, you could do that because you can now fetch the JSON representations Whereas previously, if you had to fetch and parse the Ruby DSL, it would have been a lot difficult to add tooling on top.
How's this web service being funded? This is near and dear to my heart because I am crying at night as I lose money hosting Glassboard. How is CocoaPods funding the trunk service and whatever other sort of resources they have?
Sure. I think the trunk service is actually relatively cheap for them to run because, like we mentioned, it's not really doing too much. And all of the specs themselves are still being stored on GitHub as their primary location. There are some blog posts on the CocoaPods blog that go into the trunk service in more detail. So you can read that and it'll probably be more informative than I can be. But in general, if you go to CocoaPods.org and you scroll all the way down to the bottom, you'll see that they have a lot of corporate sponsors. SoundCloud, Stripe, Heroku, Artsy, just to name a few. So there are a lot of companies that are, you know, investing somewhat heavily in CocoaPods as part of their infrastructure. And it's nice to see that quite a few of them are willing to put their money where their mouth is in terms of making sure the project is healthy and has people that can work on it full time.
So just to start wrapping up, let's talk about the future of this. And there's a couple areas I want to hit on. Number one, how does Frameworks, which was introduced in iOS 8, affect CocoaPods? Is this going to change too much for it?
I really don't think it will. The CocoaPods tool currently only generates static libraries, and that's the reason that there isn't support for Swift yet, because there are no Swift static libraries. There are only Swift frameworks, and CocoaPods does not yet generate frameworks. But this is something that the team will be working on, and once CocoaPods can generate frameworks instead of static libraries, it should pretty much just be the same from the user's perspective. One of the nice things about the CocoaPods team and their development efforts is that this is all done in the open on their GitHub. You can go in and you can read through pull requests and you can read through issues and understand exactly what the thought process and what the motivations are for changes, exactly like this one. How do we add framework and Swift support to this, you know, project that's been around for a couple of years? It's not a secret. It's not being decided in some back room. It's being decided right on the internet in the open. And I've talked to you a handful of members of the CocoaPods core team before, not about Swift or Framework specifically, but in general. And they are extremely nice people who are really open to feedback and discussion, which I think should alleviate a lot of concerns that people have about the project as well. It's not this mysterious thing that you don't really know the inner workings of. It's really very open, and you can just look on their GitHub and really familiarize yourself with the project shortcomings. They're all documented in the issues. There's no secrets, nothing trying to be swept under the rug. Everything that's good and bad and in flux about the project is very well documented and updated very frequently.
Yeah, so that was going to get me to my next question. So no Swift right now with CocoaPods, just Objective-C only?
Objective-C only for now, but like I said, Swift support is planned, is at least somewhat in the works, and you can go on github.com/CocoaPods and follow along right there.
So beyond that, what's next, do you think, for CocoaPods? What's something that you feel like is missing and you'd like to see added, or what do you think those guys are working on?
Well, we already mentioned the automatic dependency resolution. That's definitely something that I think is going to be beneficial to a lot of people. Beyond that, Swift support is clearly a big undertaking. You know, there still is a bit of Rubiness, and the switch over to JSON for the pod specs is, I think, a really good step in the right direction in terms of lowering the barrier to entry. I'm sure there's still more they can do in terms of making the initial installation process a little more streamlined. But in general, I think for a project that's not even a 1.0, that it's gotten to a point where it's really easy to get started without a lot of knowledge about how the tool is implemented itself. And I think that there are still certain issues that can crop up based on just having another layer of indirection in general. There are always cases in which, if you're trying to use an existing project, that you could have overrided a build configuration that's going to conflict in some way. And I think a large part of people's aversion is that when you do encounter one of the rough edges, it can be a bit difficult to determine exactly what went wrong. And I think once CocoaPods hits 1.0, that there'll be a lot more of a knowledge base and a lot more documentation and probably better error reporting. And I just don't think it'll be a problem anymore.
Yeah, I was I was pretty anti-CocoaPods to start, but I've pretty much turned the corner, and I would find it really hard not to use it in a project at this point. So if it's been a while since you've checked it out, I really think everyone that is an iOS developer or even OS X, it works on OS X as well, should check out CocoaPods and see if it does fit into your workflow. It's not for everyone, obviously, but I do think it's reached a point of critical mass where, as developers, we should be aware of what it's doing.
We haven't really touched on it yet, but I think it's worth noting that CocoaPods is really useful, even if you don't use any third-party code. I mean, I know myself, I have a few different libraries and helper classes that I kind of want whenever I make a new project, and CocoaPods just makes it really easy to bootstrap the creation of a new app that pulls in, you know, the five things that you always use, even if they're all your own code.
Oh, so doing that with like your own private repos or private pod specs or whatever it is?
Exactly. At Tumblr, we have our app broken up into a few different CocoaPods, and it really just gives us flexibility in terms of not only being able to spin up a new app if we wanted that automatically had our API support and our caching layer, but it even just helps you write more modular code where we don't have certain parts of the code base that are referencing other parts in the code base that maybe they shouldn't be. When you kind of think of things as individual components and modules in their own repo that have their own dependencies or lack thereof, it really does tend to make you write cleaner code.
You guys really don't want to see Glassboard's code if you're modularized. Mine is one giant repo of everything, but we're going to fix that and we'll save that for another episode. Brian, thank you for coming on Cocoa Radio.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Brian Irace is a mobile developer at Tumblr. If you want to give him feedback on this week's show or just talk CocoaPods or Tumblr or any sort of other stuff, Jets football starting up soon. He's Irace on Twitter, I-R-A-C-E. He's also blogging on Tumblr, of course, at irace.me. If you've got feedback for this show, you can send that to me on Twitter as well. I'm Justin. Thanks, as always, to Tony, Big Liv, and Voss for making us sound good, and we will talk to you all next week.